and welcome to the High Ground podcast. My name is Clee Stacey and I am a life coach.
My name is Anthony Turi. I am a therapist, and for six episodes we're going to be chewing over what coaching is, what therapy is, and our different takes on spirituality and personal development. Hello, everyone.
Hello. And hello to our special guest, my favourite person in the entire world, Jonathan Franklin!
Woohoo!
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
Welcome, Jolie.
Before we delve into it, just like last week, I would really love for us all to just take a moment to ground ourselves in this moment. So to centre yourself. So wherever you are, if you're sitting down, or if you're on your walk, wherever you are, just take a couple of breaths, two deep and gentle breaths, arriving where you are. That one felt really good for me.
That was so nice.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And compared to what we just had 2 minutes ago when we did this off podcast and I couldn't stop giggling. And actually, somehow I just feel immediately grounded. And there's something, I think we've talked about this a million times, but intention and just really settling yourself in intention. And the power of that group dynamic as well, like everyone setting the intention and everyone being grounded in that, and the presence of not just us three but you listening, knowing that you are listening is really grounding as well. So it's not just the three of us, it's the three of us plus you listening, and that for me is really big and it's really helpful. So already we're not even a minute in, but thank you already for being here and listening along with us. So, Anthony, tell us a bit about what we're talking about today.
Okay, so thanks for that. Actually, I noticed my feet and my legs. I connected with them again, having done that. So we're focusing on the body today, which is something I'm very passionate about as a gestalt therapist. So I thought I could set up my thinking and how I got here, and explaining why I wanted Jolie on, and that would set up the themes for our discussion. So I'm going to start at the beginning. 1951, Gestalt therapy, excitement and growth in the human personality. 1951, okay? These guys put the body at the heart of the therapy project, okay? So I think they were ahead of their time, and a lot of the things that people talk about in terms of body work more recently can be traced back to this. So right at the heart of Gestalt therapy is a focus on the body, which is something I'm very passionate about in my work. 2014, Bessel van der Kolk, The Body Keeps the Score. And I think one of the wonders of the modern world, I think this book, I think it's such a gift. And so I fully properly read it in the last couple of years, and I was, you know, aware that this is a trauma expert, and so I almost put my metaphorical suit and tie on, and I was ready to read it. And it really opened up to me how he spoke about, well, actually, you know, trauma work also involves dance and art therapy, and then yoga. And there's this huge section on yoga, which is something I've never engaged in. And his journey is really interesting because he started doing some yoga work to help him heal some trauma, I think. And he's ended up training as a yoga teacher as well. So one of the world's foremost experts in trauma is also a yoga teacher. So this is where it really sparked my interest in yoga. In lockdown, I took up yoga for the first time. And on Easter Sunday, Clee, you let me know about a session Jolie was running. And so I took part in that on Instagram. And I mean, I really enjoyed it. And I was really struck Jolie, by your, what to me felt like a real sense of presence, and your embodied sense of yourself. And it was interesting because I have met you in person, but I had a sense of an intuitive knowing that this is somebody who would know about this stuff. And so that's also something I think is important here, is that, you know, when I experience an intuitive knowing, it's something I experience in bodily terms. So that's what's led me here. So that's setting up the themes of this podcast. I think, you know, the body at the heart of therapy or coaching. Jolie, your interest in yoga, what is a means of intuitive knowing, and embodiment more generally. So I think if we could start, Jolie, if you'd tell us a bit about your journey to this point and what you do and how you got into it.
We haven't got all day, right?
it's a long story, so I'll try and...
You're a good...
Highlights. Speaker.
Yeah, I'll try and keep it insightful but brief.
you're an embodiment coach.
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. Yeah.
And so I've kind of... All of the work that I have done from a young age until now has always been body-based. So growing up, I was a performer, I was a dancer, I was musical theatre trained. So from the age of two, that was my life, was move my body, singing, dancing, and projecting something. But what I noticed was that in musical theatre, acting, you're projecting a character. So when I got to, I think I was about 17, 18, I started to delve deeper into myself and who I was. So connecting to the sense of self, because I was so accustomed to projecting a character and not projecting my emotions, but, you know, playing something different. And my mum's a yoga teacher. She's Buddhist. She's a Zen Buddhist teacher, and a mindfulness meditation instructor. So for me, the initial part of this journey, I was very resistant. It's always, you know, what your parents tell you to do, you're like, I don't want to do that, because your parents are telling you to do it. And every time I'd be stressed or something would happen, my mom would be like, you just need to meditate. And I'd be like, no, like, because you've told me to, that means I don't want to do it. And it's only really been, I'd say, the past three, four years that I've actually found my rhythm with meditation and yoga and that kind of journey, because it's been my choice. At one point, people weren't telling me to do it. I chose to do it for myself. And the main reason why I delved deeper into the world of embodiment was about 3 years ago, I experienced full-on burnout. Physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, complete burnout. I was at work on a Sunday and I was feeling really tired and fatigued and, you know, just the usual sensations that I think most people in the modern world feel. And I was running on a treadmill and I fainted, passed out on a moving treadmill. And I had all of these lumps on the back of my head, like all of my lymph nodes in my body completely swelled up. And I went to A&E and I had adrenal fatigue. My adrenal glands had completely stopped working. My thyroid had switched off and my whole body was basically shutting down. And it terrified me. I mean, Claire, you'll remember, I was completely, I thought I was gonna die. I really did. And it kicked me up the butt, because I was like, how have I been so unaware of my body that it's taken this for me to check in? And I think that's what's really important, and something that I really kind of, I talk about a lot on my Instagram, I talk about with clients, is why is it that we only listen when we're in an extreme state? So why is it that we only seek therapy or coaches when we're suicidal or when we're depressed, when we're so anxious that we can't function? It's that kind of that learning to notice it before it happens. And that's what I started to do through various spiritual practices. And I got more into my yoga and meditation and breath work, and just, I really absorbed myself in spiritual practices. And I was so resistant to take medication. like they got to the point where my thyroid just wasn't working, and they were like, you know, we need to put your medication. And I was like, no, I'm going to heal this myself. Like, I know I'm powerful and I know I can do this. And within, so I got the diagnosis in the October, by January, I was healed. My thyroid had returned back to normal. My levels were fine. My bloods were fine. I had energy. And I was fine. And it was all because I made that choice to listen to my body, to heal my body with my own energy, my own power, and to not let fear drive the car. And I think that's something that's really important, is so often all of our decisions and our actions are fear-based, especially in the Western world, because we're so conditioned to be in that state of, if you don't do it right, you failed. And that really struck me. I was like, no, like, it's in the doing is the success. It doesn't matter what the outcome is, but dropping that perfectionism mentality changed everything for me. The only competition I had or have ever had is myself.
And you were in competition.
Yeah.
Oh my God, were you in competition? Like, I look back at that you now and I'm like, I remember at the time thinking, I don't understand how she's functioning. You were at uni, you were working as well. How many jobs?
Three jobs,
physical jobs, as well as studying. What were you studying?
Sports rehabilitation, so yeah. Sports physical therapy.
So she was studying about the body, which is ironic, as well as using your body every day, constantly. And I remember just being so in awe of you. And I say that, and I'm kind of like, do I want to be in awe of you? Because actually, you weren't healthy. You weren't happy. Like, you weren't happy at all. And I'm in awe of you for doing it, but I'm even more in awe of you for listening when your body was like, here's your wake-up call. Because so many people go, here's your wake-up call, and they go, someone else fixed me, drugs.
Yeah, and that is one of the most important aspects of any spiritual practice. And I feel like with coaching and therapy as well, is you have to fix the root to fix the plant. You can't just stick on a brand new flower and make it look all pretty with blue tack. You have to dig deep, find that root that is infected, that is wounded, and you have to heal it from that point. And Western medicine does not do that.
No.
Western medicine is incredible for acute injuries, like if you need a blood transfusion or you've lost an arm or you've been in some traumatic event, Western medicine is incredible. And I definitely don't discredit it. But from a mental standpoint and from a trauma-based standpoint, Western medicine sucks. And I will happily say that. Like, it fixes the symptoms.
Yeah.
So if you've got a rash on your skin, you'll get a cream from your doctor. You go to a doctor in India, for example, with a rash on your arm, they will say, okay, what are you eating? How much water are you drinking? How do you feel in your body? What supplements are you taking? I think you spoke about this on your podcast last week, but what are you reading? What are you looking at? Who are you surrounding yourself with? And that is what embodiment work is. It's about getting to the roots of your symptoms and treating it from that point and not just masking it with drugs and creams and stuff like that, if that makes sense.
And it's, again, I remember how when you decided I'm going to heal this, it was really like the things that you did were, at that point, it wasn't dance. It wasn't the things you do now. It was celery juice every morning.
Yeah.
It was not eating cake, which we do now, by the way. But right now, are you eating cake? Are you back on the cake thing?
I am eating cake again because it's my birthday next week. And I've decided that it's my birthday now, so I'm eating cake again.
But you didn't a couple of weeks ago.
I had 10 days off sugar, and I feel so much better for it. Because I was, I'm going on a tangent here.
It's all about the body.
All about the body, yeah. my sort of thing is when I'm out of my body, I comfort eat. And I think a lot of people, especially women, can relate to that. And that's always been how I've comforted myself, like how I self-soothe is I eat junk food, cake, crisps, all the things. And it's interesting, and what made me choose to not have sugar for 10 days was because I actually recognized, I did a really, really deep meditation and I kind of reflected on the feelings I was feeling at that time and when I felt them in the past. And I remember, and it was a really funny memory, as a kid, because my mum was super duper healthy and we never had junk food in the house. So junk food was always really exciting. It was like a treat and it was like a celebration. And I remember, I think I was like 8 or 9 years old and I wanted sugar. I had, my parents were fighting in the other room and I was feeling really unsafe. And I was like, I need something to comfort myself. And that was what I knew was food. So I went into the kitchen and I couldn't find anything unhealthy. And I was like, vegetables and stuff that you don't want to eat when you're craving sugar. So I made up, it's kind of disgusting, but you know, I found some stale gone off digestive biscuits, which I smothered in honey, healthy Devonshire local honey, you know, use like half the tub. And I like scoffed it. And I got to such an extreme state of like scoffing that I threw up. And it was that feeling of like, I am so desperate for nurturing and for safety that you kind of, I was not in my body at all. And it was to the point where my body switched on. My body overtook my mind because I was harming myself and it threw up. And remembering that a couple of weeks ago, it again kind of gave me another kick up the butt because I was like, okay, you're getting to that point again. Why? What is the root of this? Where has this come from? And it was because it was the Black Lives Matter movement was happening and it was at the peak of that. And my dad is African. So we were going through a lot of stress with that. And I was comfort eating all day, every day. I was eating like a whole family-sized tiramisu biscuits. And I was really getting back into that mindset again of, I need to feel safe because I didn't feel safe. And it was so interesting just giving myself the time to sit and reflect. Like I was sat in meditation for about 2 hours and it was only about an hour and a half in that this memory came up. And that's something that we can talk about in a second. But giving ourselves time for the body to communicate with us. It's not instantaneous. You don't meditate for 5 minutes and the world is great. Your body has to trust that it's safe to release these things. And that takes time. And I mean, I've been meditating really deeply for only about 18 months. So I'm very much at the start of my practice, really. But it's about honoring your flow of your body. And for some people, they can get into deep meditation really, really quickly. And sometimes I can. But for all of the really deep stuff to come through, it takes me quite a long time. Like I have to sit for a while. And I dedicate myself to doing that. And I allow myself to sit for as long as I need. If I need to sit there for 5 hours, I'll do it. And I have that commitment to myself to see what comes up. And I'm really curious now. Like I'm not fearful of my body and of trauma. I'm curious about it. I'm like a kind of interested child that's like, oh, what does this mean? Oh, I feel this. Why? What does that mean? And it's almost like it's kind of exciting because I'm like, oh, what do I get to heal? Like, what can I now make space for? Because even in the past month, I'm a completely different person because I've done so much deep work. And with my clients, I'm now able to go deep with them because I trust myself to go deeper so I can hold space for more traumatic energy with my clients because I've gone there myself. And I think that's really important to be able to hold space for people. You have to be willing to go there yourself first.
Something I'm going to rewind a bit and
yes, please do. I waffle.
No, I love it. we love the waffles. You said something that really caught my attention, and that was when you were talking about your digestive biscuit and honey fun, which, to be fair, I know you vomited, but I'm thinking about how I can make something out of that right now. Sorry.
I don't like honey anymore. That, so
much honey. Good to know.
Yes.
But when you said my body responded, it responded, rather than saying I responded, it was it.
Mm.
So your body, as we've talked about, Anthony, like, your mind is a tool. It's not who you are. Who you are is the beingness behind it. It's like both your mind and your body, which is why people talk about, you know, mind, body, and soul, or mind, body, spirit, is that there are these three things and they communicate all the time. Most people, especially in the Western world, we think that they're all the same thing. And our identity and our personality is this one thing. And actually, it's three separate things. And we've talked a lot in the other podcast about your mind as a tool. But actually here, what I love that you just said was that your body is a tool. And it's not just a tool, it's a guidance system. So it's an alert system, it's a guidance system. And when we feel good, it's important that we talk about how our body feels good as well, not just trauma.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it can feel good, and that's do that again, we like that. As well as the body saying, I know what you're trying to do. It's like your brain was trying to comfort yourself, knowing, okay, comfort food, that makes you feel good, that makes you feel safe. But your spirit knew that that was bollocks because it wasn't working. And your body was in communication with those things and going, nope, this hurts us. So mentally, your mind was going, this feels good. It doesn't feel quite good enough. So keep doing it until it feels good enough. But actually physically in your body, it didn't feel good. Like physically, it didn't feel good. Emotionally, it might have done. But physically, your body was screaming at you. And sometimes it's sad that we have to get to a point of extremes to get there.
Well, I think the key thing in that is the idea of body awareness. And, you know, you hit on that point about how many of us in the Western world are conditioned to just not have that body awareness. And that's something that really didn't really start to develop for me until I started my Gestalt training. And I mean, these guys, 1951, they spoke about the idea of the permanent trance, people living life as though they're in a permanent trance, completely out of touch with their own body experience, just in the head. I mean, something we do in Gestalt all the time is whatever a client is saying to us is we'll say to them, okay, well, where are you experiencing that? You know, you're sad. Where is that sadness? How do you feel as you tell me that? What is going on inside you? What sensations do you notice as you tell me that? So we really try and shift away from the story and try and just bring the attention back as much as possible to, you know, what is happening inside you? What are your sensations as you're saying that? And can you stay with that? What do you notice? And what happens when you stay with that? Is that something that you guys do as well in your work?
I definitely. It's interesting, actually, because for some clients, that approach works really well because it needs to be heavily facilitated. But for some clients, and Klee is one of them, when you start asking questions, it automatically brings people back into their mind. So for some people, it's very much, I will kind of let them lead the way themselves. So I will say, you know, I'll do a lead in meditation, get them all juiced up and in their body. And then I'll just be like, whatever is going on for you, I want you to just be present with that. And then I'll give them about 10 minutes where they're just sat in silence, being with it. I might remind them to come back to the breath. I'm very much intuitive in the sense that I watch them while they're doing this, so I can sense their energetic kind of, if they're uncomfortable, or if I notice their shoulders start getting tense, or the jaw is a really common one. Every single one of my clients holds stress in their jaw and in their throat. And you can see that, you know, when someone is stressed, yes, someone next to me. So I might guide them like, oh, relax your jaw, and I'll guide them from that sense without asking lots of questions. And I think for people that are really new to embodiment as well, it's really important that we give them time to create their own practice without asking, what does this feel? Where do you feel this? What is this emotion that you feel? Because sometimes overly questioning, for me, I find is overwhelming for people.
That's a really great point, actually. And it's something that was, you know, really brought home to me in my training, is the idea of, I love this phrase, meeting people where they're at.
Yeah.
And how, for some people, if you just go in there with body inquiries, that just won't land. And it's kind of a gentle process sometimes of just, let's try and travel the road towards raising awareness of the body. But if you just go in too deep, it won't work.
Exactly. And I think something that I am doing more with my clients, because I coach women, is connecting to that soft, feminine, nurturing energy, because women are so heavily in that fight or flight masculine energy. That's why I got sick. It's because my adrenals were trying to keep up with me and they couldn't. And that has been the most powerful work that I've done, is making it safe to be vulnerable and soft and feminine and to nurture yourself, because most people don't know how to look after themselves from a deep level. When they feel uncomfortable, when they feel sad or angry or overwhelmed or unsafe, it all comes back to a sense of safety.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do, so they drink, or they'll go and see friends, or they'll watch Netflix. Netflix is a really big one. They'll watch rom-coms, and there's nothing wrong with these things, but it's having that awareness of, am I doing this because I like it and I enjoy it and this is a nice thing for me to do, or am I doing it because it's giving my mind something else to do so I can avoid what's actually going on?
Is it truthful?
Yeah.
And it feels different when we do these things. Just like, I don't know why it came to me, but sex. You can have sex, one night stands and fucking, basically. Really bodily, to me, that is disgusting. I've done it and I remember it, but actually being totally connected in that moment, it's completely different. When you're enjoying some food, when you're just shoving stuff in your face, and you and I, for our sins, actually sometimes egg each other on, like, let's eat all the cake today. Do you want some cake? Should we buy one cake each? You know, it's like, yeah. And we do that, but then we also go, no, let's not. But it's a different feeling, you know. It's sometimes I'll know that I want to stuff my face with food today, and sometimes I allow myself to. But if I'm going to allow myself to, I'm very conscious more often, let's be honest, more often I'm conscious, if I'm going to stuff my face, then I'm going to get strawberries or I'm going to get fruit and veg, because if I'm going to stuff my face with something, then I want it to be healthy. I'm not advocating that necessarily, but it is something that at least I know that there is a conscious awareness, because I also know that tomorrow I have clients and tomorrow I'm going to do things. And I don't want to feel crappy tomorrow. And I want to feel my best self. And I want to sit with myself. And there's just different ways of doing it and feeling it. And it's that conscious mind awareness connected to the body awareness.
I think what's really important as well is, with all of these things and with any action you choose to ever take in your life, is to ask yourself the question before you take that action, is, what is the most loving thing I can do for myself in this moment? So is choosing to eat cake with your bestie and laugh and enjoy, is that loving? Well, yeah, because we have a great time and it's fun and we don't stuff ourselves to the point of vomiting, you know, I mean, we probably have occasionally, yeah. But you know, we're not trying to numb anything. Like, we have such open conversations when we're eating cake.
Do you remember that cake we had? I don't know.
I like how this is now a podcast about cake.
Obviously it's us. I don't know. It was a month ago when we were, we are socially distancing, safely. But a month ago when like you got in my car, but like you were in the back seat of my car, so we're like distance.
It's very strange.
But we want to eat cake together. So we went to the shop and we bought Earl Grey and lemon.
Oh my God, it was so good.
We were just sat there. If someone was listening, it must have sounded so strange because we were literally like, oh my God, this is so good. I can't even believe how good this is. This tastes so good. It was so good, Anthony. It was so good. I just can't explain to you how good it was.
I'm feeling it right now. I can, but Dad, taste the cake.
I want to shove it in my face. I wanted to savor every mouthful. It was soft and tasty, and that's present. We were really present with it.
You can add an element of mindfulness to anything that you do. So mindfulness eating, mindfulness walking, mindfulness breathing, mindfulness office working, whatever you do in an office, you can do it mindfully, you know. And it's about, again, it all comes back to presence and being in the moment. And so often what I find for myself when I look back on my old patterns and when I speak to clients is we are either future focused or past focused. It's one or the other.
Anxiety or depression.
Yeah. So we're usually depressed about the past, anxious about the future. One or the other. Sometimes both.
The dream. Yeah.
And people find it really, really difficult and a really foreign concept to be here now. That means nothing to most people. That's not something that they can grasp because, well, I've got to do this and I've got to do that because I did this before and this didn't work. So then I have to go and do this again and I have to do it differently and blah, 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 blah. And they just go on and on and on. I mean, even just saying that is really exhausting. Yeah. And that is...
As a gestalt therapist, we put the present moment at the heart of our work. So
yeah, exactly.
How does this relate to the body?
Yes, this is where I'm heading. You knew what I was going to talk about. So...
What I do.
It all comes back to the sense of presence, and the best way to gauge how you are doing in this moment is by listening to your body. The body only lives in the present moment. The body doesn't live yesterday. The body doesn't live tomorrow. We only know what's going on right now because the body is present. The heart beats right now. You breathe right now, and it's ticking over without us consciously being aware. The subconscious is driving everything, our breath, our heartbeat, our lymphatic flow, the liver, all of these systems going on behind closed doors are consistently going all of the time to keep us alive. And when we ignore these systems, they tell us way before they get to the point of extremes. It's like I have because I do still treat some physiotherapy clients, but pretty much every client I get, it's like, oh, my ankle was hurting for about 6 weeks and I just ignored it. And it was getting worse and worse, but I thought, you know, it's fine. I'll rest it for a day. And then I went for a 50K run and it broke. Okay, so when did this start? When did you first start to notice pain? Oh, about 2 months ago. And that's the thing, that is the process that people go with anything, especially emotions. Like if someone feels a little bit angry towards something, or they feel sad, or even if they feel joyful, positive emotions come into this as well. That is an indication that your body is feeling something and that something is shifting energetically for your body. And we don't allow ourselves to feel emotions very deeply. Unless we're drunk or intoxicated, in which case you see people fully ecstatically laughing or dancing or being really angry. Some people get incredibly angry when they drink or when they take drugs. And that's because they're portals to open us deeper. And you don't need these things to be that open, but it's like easier and there's more permission to be like that because should anything terrible occur, you're like, oh, well, I was drunk, so it's fine. There's no accountability. Whereas if you aren't influenced by something external, you have to be accountable for yourself. And this is another thing that I work with clients is self-accountability. You have to be accountable for your own emotions, for your decisions, for your actions. Even if something really terrible is happening in your external world, it's up to you how you decide to respond and how you decide to receive the external world. we so often live in a state of blame and shame. And I am guilty for this too. I did, especially with my family. I am like this because of this is something that we hear all the time. I am sick because of this. I am the way I am because of this. And that's not true.
And it's so interesting because I'm hearing you say that, and I, what I'm perceiving of myself that I used to do and sometimes still do, I'm like, I can see that's what other people do, right? It's always an other people thing. It's like, yeah, I really get that because my friend does that and my mum does that. And we can always see it in other people. Like they blame. But for me, it's actually true that this thing's happening to me and it's not my fault. And it's always the same thing. Every client I have, it's the same. It's like, yeah, no, I totally get that they over there just aren't taking responsibility. Why won't my mum do it? Why won't my boyfriend do it? Why won't they do it? And it's like, you're not special. This is what one of our coaches, Varney, she's like, your feelings, your responsibility. You are not special. None of us are special. We're all special in our own unique way. And also, we're all human beings in a body doing things on repeat with our subconscious and ignoring our bodies. And that really hit for me when she said that, like, you're not special.
It's how, like, much of an ego kick is that though? Like, you're not special. But my mum said I was special and I've done this and I've done that and I've been through this trauma and I survived this really beautiful big thing. Therefore, I'm special, right? Right? Please say I'm special. Please say I'm special. And it's up to us to decide how special we want to be. It doesn't matter whether our parents say we're special or our best friends say we're these amazing people. Mm. If you don't believe it, it's never going to happen. Mm. And, you know, if you don't feel like you're enough and you don't feel that you're good enough to do something or your feelings aren't valid and you're not living up to your truth because you don't even know what your truth is in the first place, because you don't feel good enough to even consider what your truth might even be. Like, it's, you can go on and on and on with it, but it's inside out. That's how I live, not outside in.
And even when we talk about this, I'm like, we're talking, and one of the things that I noticed that I do, you know that I do this, I get in my head. I talk. And sometimes, and like, there was a moment there when you were talking and all I heard was in my head was that Jolie's talking. And it's almost, I think we both notice this in each other and I notice it in me. When I'm talking from my head, I'm not interested in what I'm saying. I'm just not interested in what I'm saying when I'm in my head. And you can, not that you were in your head, I mean, you might've been in your head then, but you know, when you talk about things that are in your head, I get bored of it. But there's times when we voice note each other, you know, podcast basically, and it's some, and there's a difference between the moments when we're really in flow and it's like blah 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 blah, like there's just talk, and you message me sometimes, you're like, oh, there's a lot of words. what are you feeling? Like, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, thank you.
And I think that point about the beyond the words is crucial. I mean, something we do in Gestalt is we would say the therapist is a resonating chamber. So what we try and do is we really try, and I think you alluded to this earlier, Jolie, is we'll really try and attune to what our client is feeling. And I'll also try and just check in with myself as they're talking, and I'll just try and notice what is going on in my body, and I'll try and see what am I feeling. And often I'll offer that, and I'll say, rather than respond to the content necessarily of what they're saying, I'll say, well, you know, as you were saying that, I feel a real tightness in my stomach, or I feel a real heaviness in my chest. What do you make of that? And then offer that back to them. Because I feel that on the one hand, that actually just feeling it, but then feeling it in response to someone, that can be a really powerful thing. Obviously, it could just be my stuff, so that's why I'll offer it lightly. But this idea of responding to the felt sense of what is being said, beyond the words, I think is really where we hit upon a really rich seam of work.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that I go through a similar approach with my clients. And again, that works for some people and for some people it doesn't. And you have to be, I'm sure you've probably found this, you have to be very empathic when you're dealing with the body and other people. And you have to be able to differentiate between what is my stuff and what is their stuff, because we feel other people's stuff. Yeah. And for some clients, if they're going through something, or they're, I do a lot of sort of dance and shaking work and physical work in my healing sessions that I do with clients. And if I say, oh, I can feel a tightness in my throat, or, but because I've said that, I actually now feel a tightness in my throat.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, because you've said it, and it's, you know, when you say a word, the body responds. So instead of me saying what I feel, I give them a cue, like, just bring your awareness to your throat and soften in that space. So instead of telling them what I'm feeling, I'll give them a cue to allow them to do it. And then we'll come and discuss afterwards, you know, what did you feel? And pretty much every single time they're like, oh, you know, when you told me to soften my throat, I didn't realize how tense I was. And I softened it and I felt so much better. And I felt that myself, but it's about not making it about me and not being like, oh, good. I can sense that you've released that. I can feel the lightness in my throat, and because that's still me talking about me. So it's, yeah, I very much kind of, I just facilitate and I just guide. And what I sense, I'll cue them to maybe shift their state a little bit. And it's about really tailoring your response for each client, because everyone's different. Because for some people, they like that sense of, oh, you're here with me. So when you say you're feeling this and I'm feeling it, I feel safer to release it because I feel like I'm supported. So this is why I love this work, is because every single session you have with people is different. And even if it's the same client, no one is different. No one is the same on any given day. So I could have a session with Clee today and then Clee this afternoon and it'll be completely different. And that's what makes it so amazing and exciting.
Your client will show you what they need for their healing.
Exactly, yeah.
There's two themes that came up there for me as you were talking, that keep coming up as you've been talking as well today with both of you. Is one is, you know, safety. The body is a source of safety. You know, if you're not feeling safe in your body, if you're not feeling safe in your body with your therapist, with your coach, you can't really do anything. And then the polarity of that is, which we in Gestalt call the experiment, or the trying things out. So firstly, there's getting that sense of safety in the body, but then there's also, and I think you were alluding to it just there, is this sense of trying things out, which we'll do in Gestalt as well. So for example, with a client, I was doing a phone session with them and they were talking about anxiety, and I just had a hunch and I said, by the way, are your feet on the floor? And they said, actually they're not, no. So we just played with just saying that again, what, with their feet on the floor and paying attention to them, and it just changed what they were feeling completely. Or another client who was talking about not feeling they were doing so well in a certain area of their life, and I just said, well, you know, how are you sitting right now? And then we played with standing up and talking about what they were doing, and just that difference in posture and the difference in the body created a different felt sense of their experience, which I think was just a much more direct means of getting to the heart of the issue rather than just talking about it, if that makes sense. So, but that kind of play and experimentation equally can only arise when there's a sense of safety. So safety and experiments. I mean, yeah. Do you have any thoughts on that?
And I think, yeah, going up to body language, I mean, you can tell how someone is feeling based on the way that they move their body and the way that they sit. Clea is now sitting up straight. She was slouching.
With my arms crossed, because I'm remembering that you told me to, and I feel bad that I didn't.
But yeah, this is why it's so important. This is why I would never do a phone session with someone, because I read their body language and the way that their facial expressions, the way that they're looking, are they looking at me even if it's through a screen, or are they talking but kind of not really looking at me directly and giving me that eye contact? And the way that we hold ourselves is a direct reflection of how we feel about ourselves. And most people aren't.
You're a Gestalt therapist. Sorry, was that?
Yeah, I am. It's my secret. I'm fascinated. We'll have to chat more about it another time. But yeah, where was I? I've gone on a tangent. Yeah, so what I've noticed about myself is, because I used to slouch, Clea will know this, like when I'm not okay, I slouch and I'm not really a sloucher. So that is a big indication for me that something's going on and I'm not dealing with it. Because I have very good posture naturally because I was a dancer as I grew up and I've done lots of yoga. So for me to have a really closed body position, and it's interesting, it's if you think about your sternum, so the big bone in the front of your chest that your rib cage attaches to, if you put your hands on it and look at what direction it's going. So when you slouch, it faces the floor. When you're open and you're proud and you're powerful, it faces up towards the sky. And just even having that as a reference point, like where is my chest today? Am I open? Am I up towards the sky? Or am I closed, shut off by the ground? And even just saying that, you're like, and you can start to move that part of the body. Even for me, just moving this part of my body, I'm like, oh, I can actually feel a little bit of emotion in there. And then from that point, you can then go deeper and deeper and deeper. So just connecting, and that's the heart space from an energetic chakra point. That's the heart space. That's our sense of love, how lovable we feel, how loved we feel by others. And for most people, their hearts are closed to keep themselves safe, to protect themselves, because they don't feel lovable. They don't feel enough. The sense of enoughness comes from the heart space, and the body reflects that sense of enoughness. And I don't feel enough 24/7. And the way that I can check in with how I'm doing is what's going on in my heart today. And even just something like, if you're really stuck in your head, just put your hand over your chest. And don't just lightly put it there. Something that I do with clients when they're really getting stuck in their head is put your hand on your chest, place it there firmly with authority. See how that feels. You can feel your heart beating. There's a life force inside of you that you've disconnected from.
We're all doing this, by the way. Yes. So I hope you're listening and doing
this. Wherever you are in the world, put your hand on your chest. Yes, let's all do this. So wherever you are, if you're sat at home, if you're driving, maybe don't do this.
Do it safely.
Yes, do it very safely. Or pull over. Pause and pull over. So put your hand on your chest and really press your palm and your fingertips into that chest. And just notice the sensation of the touch, that firm touch. Maybe you can feel your heart beating. Maybe you can't. Either way, it's fine. And just start to move the hand in a circular motion. So kind of giving yourself a massage.
So it's not a stroking.
So it's not a stroke. It's an authoritative touch. It's you're nurturing yourself with power and presence. And just notice how that feels. If it feels anything.
That's really nice.
And even just doing that, you know, the tone of my voice has changed. The resonance of my voice has changed. I feel more open. I feel more loving. And maybe you're doing this, a lot of people start doing this and they want to cry and they don't know why they want to cry. And this is the thing, being able to express emotion without a why. You can be sad for no reason. You can be angry for no reason. You can feel fucking fantastic for no reason. And that's the magic.
And there probably is a reason, but you don't have to know it.
Yes.
This is the thing with so many clients of mine, it's and friends, and the inquiry in personal development is it's always why. And there is a lot of validity to doing some of that work, of course.
Like, definitely.
There is a lot of validity to understand.
I would say Fritz Perls, his big thing was we don't focus on the why. We focus on how and what. So we're in alignment here.
There is definitely some validity to understanding it, because there are definitely some people who want to get it. But it doesn't have to be big and complicated. Some people don't see that this trauma that happened in their childhood had an effect on who they are now. But you don't have to go into the big trauma. You don't have to go into it and delve into the dark. You don't have to be complicated about it. You can just acknowledge it as as truth and happened and happening and impacting. And then it doesn't have to be a big, long, drawn out, horrific process. And what you just did was really interesting, because when you were talking about noticing what's going on, not once did you say, and now change it. Even when you said, okay, when your sternum is facing down, you tend to feel this way, or when it's facing up, you tend to feel this way. You didn't then say, so point it upwards so you feel good. It's not about your mind directing how to feel. It's
raising awareness.
And it's just the awareness, because the body knows. What is it? The body knows the score.
Keeps the score.
I knew that was a different one. So the body keeps the score, and it does its work. That's why we don't need to understand where the emotions are coming from. And I know for me, and you'll know this, that when I'll get into my body and I'll get crying, and then I'll immediately want to know why. And that takes me out.
Mm-hmm.
And so my practice is feeling the emotion. And as soon as my brain, because it's a habit and that's okay, and I'm not beating myself up for it, tends to want to understand, I calmly, kindly, and gently say, we're not doing that today. And I'm not shutting it off as a possibility. I'm just saying, we're not doing that today. We're just going to feel it. And it's really gentle. It's really, all this work is so gentle, and it's just an allowing and an opening up. And I think for a lot of people, the reason why that's scary is because the unknown, like, what's next? I don't know how I'm going to feel next. And even though what's probably likely, because, you know, that's why you go to a therapist, a coach, an embodiment coach, you're wanting an outcome. Even though that you probably know, because you've read testimonials and you've seen, read the books maybe, that the outcome is going to be good, it's still really scary to go into the unknown of what's going to happen if I just feel, because you haven't done it before. And because we don't guide our clients, none of us three guide our clients to a specific outcome.
Mm-hmm.
We guide our clients to be where they are, so that, because they are resourceful, whole, and complete, and they can take care of themselves. And that's what we're teaching them to do, is to guide them back to themselves, back to their body, back to the part of their mind that does know that they're great, back to their soul, back to the part of them that's just innately knowing. And that innate knowing doesn't talk. It doesn't shout. I mean, it might do. Am I gestalting?
Innate organismic wisdom.
As usual, we get back to Kliegestalt work. But that's what it's about. It's about leading you back. And most people, like you said earlier, do not trust themselves. And the reason why most people are in their head, because they want to be in control. And even though they don't like what they're controlling, they don't like the outcome, at least they know what the outcome is. It's safe in so much as I know what's going to happen, and I'm not dying when it happens. And I think this is why the body giving you a wake-up call of almost dying, feeling like you're dying, whether it's emotionally dying or physically dying, those are the times that we do wake up, because our brain is keeping us safe in terms of not happy, safe. It's keeping us alive. And then we say, and then our body goes, well, that worked. You're alive, so it worked. And it's only until your body gets to a point where it might not be alive,
yeah.
You know, until the ego really is challenged. It's like, oh shit, this is really not working, because I'm now about to die. I feel like I'm about, whether you're physically about to die or not, it feels, the physical feeling is I'm about to die. And that's, unfortunately, why we get to that point, and that point is often the trigger.
Definitely. I mean, I've had experiences where I felt like I'm physically going to die, but last year I had a really, possibly this was more terrifying for me than the physical death. I'd gone really deep with my coach, and I'd unearthed a really deep childhood pattern that I'd received from my parents that basically I was starting to understand myself, and it was really intense, and it was feeling a sense of aloneness, that I am alone feeling, and coming to terms with being alone and what that meant for me. And physically I was fine, like my body was fine, but I just had this such an overwhelming emotional response to that realization. I was in New Mexico in America, staying with my auntie. So I had loads of time to myself, which is why it was the perfect time for this to all come up, because I had time and space to process it appropriately.
You're also in the middle of nowhere, so the feeling of loneliness was
it
kind
was
of
accentuated,
real.
Accentuated, yeah. And I was out for a walk, and I just had this in like the pit of my stomach. It was almost like this like black cloud was in my body, and I thought I was dying. I fell to the ground. I was lying in the mud, screaming and crying. Honest to God, thank God I was in the middle of nowhere, because it sounded like I was being killed. And it was this like gut-wrenching scream of like, it was so primal. It was like I'd gone back to that primal state of, I am scared. I am alone. What the fuck now? And I was just lying in the mud for maybe about 20 minutes, just screaming and screaming and screaming and screaming. And this is something that I do with my clients, is connecting back to that primal energy and expressing it. And what was really beautiful is, of where that happened, is in New Mexico, they're really connected to the indigenous tribes. I was actually on tribal land. I wasn't meant to be, not really meant to walk on it, but I did. And I felt so incredibly held in that space. I couldn't see anyone there, but energetically I felt so safe to express myself, because it's such a beautiful, the land there is so beautiful, and whether you're a spiritual person or not, you know, sometimes you just get that inkling that you're not alone, that there is another energy there. And connecting back to that primal wild state is really important. So being able to scream, to release that throat chakra, just shout and scream. If you think about dogs, whenever they have a fight, or they're really excited, or they're in an extreme emotion, they shake it off. You know, they'll jump on you and they'll be like, yeah, this is so great, party time, woo! And then once everyone settles down, everyone's having a cup of tea and they're sat down, the dog will shake it up, and then the dog will be calm. Because that's how we release emotion. And this is the thing, we have to move our body to release stuff.
Trust you to take it back to dogs and tea.
Dogs and tea,
dogs,
and cake.
Tea and cake.
All the good things.
Life. Yeah. It's dogs, life. Tea and cake.
And that's what I do. A shaking meditation is for me, for people that are really new to embodiment and they don't know what it is, and because it's not something I can really explain in words, you have to experience it to find your own perception. But just playing your favorite song, or for me, I really like to do it to kind of drumming music, because you get that kind of the beat that you can kind of shake to, and just shaking it off for about 5 minutes. I would say minimum 5 minutes, just standing there shaking your feet, shaking your hands, like shaking everything. And you can use sound if sound feels like it wants to come out for you. And then just being still. And the sense of energy you feel in your body, it's incredible. That's what got me into embodiment. I did a shaking meditation at a festival in London, and it was the most powerful thing I've ever experienced, because from just a physical perception, my blood flow was increased. My heart rate was higher, so from less as a physical point, I was more energized because I'd done something, same as if you go for a run. But I've never felt connected to every inch of my body like I did after that. And I just like started laughing and crying, and all of this stuff was coming out for me, and it was beautiful. Like the facilitator really held the space, because everyone was going through that, everyone was kind of feeling that. And it's really not complicated to connect to your body. And this is the importance, is it's really simple. And that's what makes it so beautiful. It doesn't take hours and hours and hours of digging deep and trying. when you feel safe and when the body is ready and when you're connected, it comes up naturally. There's no trying. And that's what I really like, is you connect that sense of being. We are human beings. We are not human doings. And I think you've both said this quite a few times. But really allow that to settle. Mm. You're a human being. When was the last time you connected to being? Because all we do is do.
Mm. And that it's this... It's amazing how themes come, everything we talk about comes up in so many different things. So this theme of just being and not trying, like so much of the time when I started this stuff, I was like, yeah, but how? Talk to me, explain it to me. It's like, I can't. You just have to do it. And it's not trying to do it, it's just doing it. Like, if you're trying, you're not doing it. If you're trying, you're not being. Trying isn't being, being is being. And then even when we talk about, I talk about efforting or not efforting, and Abraham Hicks and Law of Attraction, and a lot of what they talk about is like just allowing, the art of allowing. It's an art. It's not a difficult art. It's not a fine art. It's not intricate. It's a very simple sensation. It's allowing, it's not efforting. If efforting is trying, trying is efforting. Mm-hmm. And so even like, okay, I'm going to get in my body. I'm going to get in, going to get in my body. Right. How do I get in my body? Okay. Right. It's like, you're never going to get there.
And I'm officially getting into my body now.
Yes, I have decided. And
I flicked the switch and now I'm in. Great. Yeah.
And actually it is that, but it's not from the head.
Yeah.
It's just a dropping in. It's a...
In.
And knowing that the way you got into your body this morning isn't the way you're going to get in your body now. There's not... For me and my personal practice, some days I... Like last night, I had a really intense practice where I was doing a rage ritual. And that's something I now do weekly. It's one of the most powerful things I have done. And... I play really intense tribal music. I really get in there and I jump around my room and I scream and I shout and I shake and and I get really rageful and really angry. Doesn't matter why, I just allow myself to feel it. But some days, like today, I meditated this morning and I sat still and I just breathed for half an hour. Mm. I didn't want to move. That wasn't what my body wanted. My body wanted stillness. And this is something that I talk about a lot in my yoga classes, going back to that, is whenever I offer a asana, a pose, I offer two variations. So you can hold the pose in stillness, or you can be fluid with it, especially downward dog. And you can move the body in downward dog. You know, you don't have to hold and look perfect and be in that rigidity. It's really hard to say. And that's something that I found a lot with yoga classes in studios, is there's a lot of just holding a pose, but no one knows why they're holding a pose. It's just, I'm just doing downward dog and why not? It looks kind of cool. Whereas if you find your variation, this is something that I always say at the beginning of a yoga class, is whatever pose I offer, I invite you to find your variation and what feels good for you. So if you want to sit in child's pose for 45 minutes and breathe, and that is what your body is yearning for, even though this is a power yoga class, you've come here to get stronger and do the powerful stuff, learning to accept that, okay, actually, as much as I really want to do the powerful stuff because I love it, that's not for me today. Mm-hmm. And you just offer that child's pose, and making people feel safe to make those choices in my classes, I think is really important.
And there are a few times when I've been like, I don't want to do your class today because I'm not feeling that. And often it's like, it's not even a gentle, oh, I like it, but I don't want, it's like, I should. Actually, it's more for the reality for most people listening to this is not, they haven't got to a point where they're like, what does my body want today? No, well, actually, I'm going to do that. It's, I should be doing yoga right. I should want to do the power yoga. I should want to do this. I should want to do that. And so if I can't do it, I'm just going to not. And instead of finding your version of what feels right. Maybe it's, maybe it isn't. But rather than rejecting it because it's not what I should be doing it, but I don't want to do it, fuck, I'm going to completely reject it. It's like, oh, okay. Noticing, I feel like I should, but I'm noticing that I feel like I should, and I don't want to be in the shoulds anymore.
Don't should all over yourself.
Don't should all over yourself. I said that a long time ago. Everyone talks to me about
I've been shoulding
on myself today.
I know, I got it from Rachel Brayton. Yeah. She says it a lot. And it's so true though.
Yeah.
Like, don't should, like, if you feel like you should do something, that means you shouldn't.
Yeah.
Because it's not, you're not embodied if you, yeah. If the should word comes up in your thought process, then it's a no.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess we're approaching the end of this.
Feels so.
This has been a
all day.
a really enjoyable discussion. Are there any kind of closing take-home points you guys want to offer?
I think going back to what I said earlier, I think this is a really nice thing for people to do with their own lives is every time you feel overwhelmed or you feel anything, if you're on the bus to work or you're eating dinner, is asking yourself the question, what is the most loving thing I can do in this moment? And whatever the response you get from your mind and your body, give it a go and see what happens.
And I think for me,
beautiful.
I just want to remind everyone that it doesn't matter where you are on your journey. If you're listening to this and you've somehow got this far and you're like, I don't give a fuck about the body. All right, cool. Be where you're at.
Definitely.
If you are somewhere within this journey, cool. Don't try and force yourself to be further than you're at. Or
you don't need to go and jump around your room screaming. That's just my, that's my process.
Exactly. And it's where you were and it's not what you were doing a year ago.
Yeah.
And it's not where I am yet. And I actually did it a few weeks ago and pulled my neck. So I wasn't properly embodied. But it's simple, but it's easy to get into this, okay, I should be doing more. I should be doing more. Mm. If you hear anything from what we've talked about today, take it on as information. But not as I need to be doing more, I need to be doing less. This is just something for you to take on. And if it fits, it fits. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And if you want to learn more, then we're all here to support.
If you have a curiosity that's been sparked.
Yeah. And, you know.
Ask the questions.
Yeah. This is obviously not a sales pitch. We're genuinely all in this because we were all fucked at some point and we needed help and we found the help. And now, if you just want to have a conversation with us, we're here because everyone is different. Everyone has different stuff. Everyone has different ways that their bodies show up. Everyone has different stresses that happen and we're all completely individual and yet not special.
Individual but not special.
So no shitting on yourself. No.
Find what feels good, yeah. Whatever that is.
Yeah. We love you. We love you, whatever you're doing, wherever you are at this point. And thank you for listening.
That leads me on to, I guess, a theme that's been here throughout this discussion, which is, you know, the body is a place of focus of work, but the body also is a source of safety. And the body is a source of wonderful healing.
Mm.
You know, the incredible capacity of our body to...
Body is the biggest healing tool that you have.
So I feel very optimistic, you know, as I talk about the body. And I've really appreciated this conversation with both of you. It's been great to have you on as well, Jolie.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
I'm an avid listener, so it's fun to be on this side.
So next week, which we actually have already recorded, it's very weird saying this, we're getting used to the podcast and how to manage these things. But next week's podcast is, I can say this because we've already recorded,
minor theme, very minor theme,
but it's only a
very narrow
theme. I don't know why we're doing it really. We're just talking about the life, the universe and everything.
Yes.
So that's going to be a short one. It's actually
excited about this one.
It's so good. If you are someone who listens to these and you feel our energy, next week is like, I almost don't remember what we talked about because we were both so feeling it. It was so beautifully
In flow.
In flow. Mm-hmm. If you want to experience flow, listen in, because it was just incredible. It's also the last one of this season. We do have plans for next season, so listen in next week to find more about that. And if you are enjoying this, let us know. Send us a comment, send us a review, let us know if you have any questions, because this is for you. This is not just for us, even though we love it, this is for you.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
See you guys next week. Bye.